Hello, this is Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Northland Views. We'll be reading today from the White Mountain Independent and the Payson Roundup. And from the White Mountain Independent, the stories focus largely on the various council meetings of the towns in the White Mountains. And for the first headline from Pine Top Lakeside Council tackles funding, roads, and staffing, a story by Tony Gibbons. From town finances and public works to a planned community center renovation and upcoming election matters, the Pine Top Lakeside Town Council's April 16th meeting focused largely on day-to-day issues that shape life for our residents. Among the most significant actions of the night, the Town Council approved a resolution authorizing the town to move forward with an application for roughly $510,000 in Community Development Block Grant, known as CDBG funding, for renovations to the White Mountain Community Center in Lakeside. Town Manager Christy Sauskopf said the town had held a public meeting in February to gather ideas for potential CDBG projects. Three proposals were submitted, but only the community center renovation met the program's requirements, including the need to benefit a minimum of 51% low to moderate income residents. One proposal involving Woodland Lake Park, did not qualify under the grant rules, while another, tied to a water company, would have required additional income studies and was not considered feasible within the process timeline, Sauskopf said. With no public comments during the hearing, the council approved the resolution. The council also approved a resolution calling the town's general election for November 3rd in coordination with Navajo County. Town Clerk Lisa Mears said the election item includes placing continuation of the town's home rule option on the ballot as required by state law. Police Chief Dan Barnes presented a proposal to seek funding through the Fort McDowell Yavapai Nation's 2026 Arizona Benefits Fund Grant Program, which the council approved. The program channels a portion of tribal gaming revenues to Arizona communities, supporting projects tied to public safety, education, wealth, health, environmental efforts, and broader community development. With respect to the March financial report, the meeting also included the town's financial report for that month, which showed tax revenues remaining generally stable, although still slightly behind the same point last year. Sarah Simonton of the James Vincent Group said the general fund had collected about $5.6 million in year-to-date revenue through March, including just over $4 million in transaction privilege tax collections. TPT revenue, often seen as a key barometer of local economic activity, was down about 1.6% compared to the same period in the prior year, 2025. Simonton said the decline was driven largely by a sharp drop in construction activity, which was down 57%, along with lower commercial rental activity. Retail sales, however, were up, as were restaurants and bars. Simonton also reported that the town had reconciled a prior TPT issue discussed in earlier meetings and that the numbers are now balanced through March. On the spending side, the town had spent about $5.4 million from the general fund through March, just under 60% of the annual budget. Most departments were on track or under budget, Simonton said, with the exception of the magistrate line item, which is run higher early in the year due to annual contract timing previously discussed by the council. The town ended March with about $2.35 million in general fund cash, up roughly $291,000 from February. Simonton said that while cash remains slightly below March 2025 levels, the gap has narrowed compared to the more significant year-over-year declines seen in previous reports. Simonton added, "We're now at the point of the year where we're starting to see just minor changes, and the project ending cash balance for the general fund is currently around $2.2 million. And from Sherlow is a headline, Projects Proclamations Headline solo town council meeting. A story by Tony Gibbons. Roadwork, airport upgrades, and community recognition converged at the Sholo City Council's April 7th meeting, where officials approved key capital projects while also turning the spotlight on April awareness efforts across the city. Among them, the town council recognized April as Child Abuse Prevention Month with Catherine Doyle, director of the Navajo County Family Advocacy Center, offering a stark local perspective. She said, "We serve Navajo County, Apache County, White River, Hopi, and the Navajo Nation," adding that within that boundary area, a child crime is committed every 36 hours. "That's a stat we didn't really like to hear," Mayor John Leach Jr. said, thanking Doyle and her staff for the work. Doyle went on to acknowledge the difficulty of the number, saying it definitely is not a stat that is a good stat, but it's definitely one that brings awareness. The council also proclaimed April 12th through the 18th as Public Safety Telecommunicators Week, recognizing dispatchers who serve as the first point of contact in emergencies. Speaking on behalf of the Sholo Police Department, Communications Manager Catherine Salazar described the emotional weight carried by dispatchers. Salazar said, "I've heard our dispatchers give CPR instructions to a mother whose toddler had overdosed on fentanyl. No dispatcher should have to hear that," she said. She continued, describing calls involving fires and life-threatening emergencies, adding that dispatchers often go to sleep hearing the screams of the people that they talked to that day. Leach echoed the appreciation, calling their work absolutely amazing and telling the team, "We're blessed to have you." Additional proclamations, including Week of the Young Child and Fair Housing Month, all approved unanimously as part of the consent calendar. The council went on to approve two special event liquor licenses for upcoming events at Frontier Fields. The first allows the Sholo Chamber of Commerce to host alcohol service during Rocking the Rim, scheduled for May 22nd to the 24th. The second grants the Mountain of Hope Foundation a license for the Medieval Mayhem Renaissance Fair, set for July 10th to the 12th. City staff noted both events will operate within a secured fenced area with controlled entry points and security provided by the Navajo County Sheriff's Auxiliary and the Arizona Rangers. Background checks revealed no issues with either applicant for those events. Both of these items passed unanimously. A major portion of the meeting focused on capital improvement projects, with council members moving through a series of bids and presentations that, taken together, reflect both ongoing infrastructure needs and future growth pressures across Sholo. For instance, the discussion began with the 36th Drive curb project, where city engineer Chris Reed outlined a plan that goes beyond simple curb installation. From there, the conversation shifted to the Wolford Subdivision Roadway Improvements Project, another roadway-focused effort aimed at rebuilding and extending the life of existing streets. And for a short story about the Snowflake Town Council, comes in the headline, "Snowflake Taylor Officer Receives Award for Work in an Anti-Fraud Case." A story by Suzanne Adams Okrasa. Snowflake Taylor Police Detective Amity Toth received a standing ovation as she was awarded the department's Meritorious Conduct Award at the April 7th Town Council meeting in Snowflake. Snowflake Town Police Department Chief Robert Martin explained to the Snowflake Town Council that Toth was a detective who worked a complex international fraud case that took more than $100,000 from a local resident. The case involved multiple states and multiple agencies, including the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. It also led to the arrest of one of the couriers involved. At the same time, Toth made sure the victim in the case was aware of what was going on in the case and that no additional harm came to them, he said. Martin called Toth an example of the highest standards of service. Mayor Brian Lewis added, "It's always an honor to honor our bravest and finest officer." And from Springerville Eager is a headline, "Art Grants Top Eager Town Council Meeting," a story by Jen Morea. The Eager Town Council moved through a full agenda during its April 7th regular meeting. The meeting was highlighted by the presentation of the 2026 Eager Days logo winner, approval of a large-scale mural planned for the Bash's building, and continued discussion on how the town will prioritize upcoming Community Development Block Grant Funding, CDBG. Mayor Guy Phelps turned the presentation of the 2026 Eager Days logo contest over to Councilman Bryce Burnham, whose granddaughter, Hannah Hunt, was announced as this year's winner. Burnham said the contest drew 22 submissions and identified Hannah Hunt as a winning artist. Hunt was presented with a gift to support her artwork and will be recognized again during Eager Days with a plaque. The winning logo will be used in materials promoting the annual Eager Day event, scheduled from 9 in the morning to 5 in the evening on January 20th at Ramsey Park in Eager. Council members approved a final design for a mural to be painted on the Bash's building. The item was presented as part of a student-driven effort involving the Round Valley High School art program. Students developed the mural concepts as part of a class project under the direction of art teacher Ariana Mortensen, with additional coordination and support from Brandy Snyder and Tony Contreras. During the presentation, Community Development Director Brittany Reynolds told the council that the project is being supported through outside funding, noting that the town would not even bear the cost of the mural. She said, "We are ordering $5,000 to help cover some of the supplies, and SRP, our Salt River Project, has been generous enough to cover any additional costs that are left." Students and instructors are described how the design was developed, explaining that multiple concepts were created before arriving at a final design. The selected design incorporates regional themes tied to ranching, agriculture, logging, and early settlement, along with patriotic elements reflecting the area's history and identity. Council discussion focused on the design elements and placement on the Bash's building, which was identified as a visible location suitable for a large-scale public mural. The approval finalizes the design phase and allows the project to move forward towards implementation. The mural is expected to be completed with continued involvement from students, allowing those who develop the concepts to also participate in the painting process. The council also held a required public hearing to consider how to utilize Community Development Block Grant funding. Community Development Director Brittany Reynolds walked the council through several possible project options, focusing on improvements that met federal requirements while also addressing real needs in the town. One of the primary areas discussed was replacing the town hall entrance doors, which are not ADA compliant and have created ongoing safety and maintenance issues. Reynolds said installing sliding doors would improve accessibility while also addressing those concerns. Other potential projects included improvements to the recreational center, such as Americans with Disabilities Act compliant restrooms, sidewalks, and accessible parking, along with possible upgrades at Ramsey Park and the senior center. The senior center remains a question due to jurisdiction, since it is located in Springerville. Reynolds also noted that while housing rehabilitation projects are eligible, they tend to come with significant administrative requirements and long-term obligations, making them less practical for the town to take on. And for the final town council story, we go to St. John's with a headline. St. John's honors state champions, addresses zoning, general plan, facility use. A story by Jen Morea. St. John's City Council opened its April 8th meeting by recognizing standout achievements by local student athletes, including the St. John's High School girls basketball team's AIA 2A state championship, girls basketball head coach Ray Davis as coach of the year, junior Reese Crosby as the Division IV 144-pound state wrestling champion, and senior Trace Nielsen as the Division IV 109-pound state wrestling champion. Mayor Spence Udall said the city takes pride in the way St. John's students compete at a high level, crediting athletes, families, and coaches. Council invited members of the championship basketball team and their coaches forward for recognition, and players introduced themselves and shared their class story. The girls basketball team capped a 31-5 season with a 41-36 win over Fountain Hills back on February 28th at the Arizona Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Phoenix, to secure the AIA 2A state championship, which is the program's fourth girls basketball title, first since 2009. The title followed St. John's semifinal win over Arizona Lutheran and came after several team members also competed on the school's girls soccer state championship team earlier in the year. Council also recognized Davis for his achievement as basketball coach of the year. Udall highlighted the longstanding commitment of local coaches, saying that level of success does not happen by accident, and noting Davis's decades of involvement in local athletics and the role of volunteer leadership in small communities. Crosby and Nielsen were also honored as state wrestling champions, with council presenting plaques in recognition of their achievements. Crosby, a junior, finished the season 67-1 record and won his second consecutive state title, capturing the Division IV championship at 144 pounds. Nielsen, a senior, finished with a record of 62-1 and won his first state title in Division IV 109-pound class after placing third the previous year. In other news, at the council meeting, during call to the public, Shelby Brown raised concerns about traffic safety at the intersection of Cleveland and 13th Streets, describing it as a longstanding issue where she has witnessed multiple accidents. Brown says she has contacted the Arizona Department of Transportation several times over the past 3 years without resolution and pointed to added complications from the Maverick development where traffic merges into a single lane, as well as elevation changes near the dentist's office that can create hazardous driving conditions, especially in winter. Shelby asked whether the city could work more closely with ADOT to explore a possible solution. You're tuned in to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you're listening to Northland Views. And from White River is a headline, East Fork Robotics puts White River on the map again. Story by Tony Gibbons. Inside a small school tucked into the White Mountain Apache tribal lands in White River, a group of students is quietly creating something much bigger than robots. They're building confidence, teamwork, and a reputation that now stretches far beyond the reservation. At East Fork Lutheran School, where just over 100 students attend kindergarten through eighth grade, nearly half of the fifth through eighth graders have chosen to take on one of the most demanding extracurriculars available, competitive robotics. They're not just participating, they're winning. For the second year in a row, an elementary team from East Fork Lutheran captured the Arizona State Championship, solidifying the program's rise as one of the most competitive in the state of Arizona. This year's champions, Trele Yellow, Jarlene Hawkins, and Kalei Tenisteth, are all first-year robotic students. Together, they competed as the Ninja Turtles, navigating a high-pressured format that demands far more than simply building a machine. They worked tremendously hard and overcame some tough obstacles and stuck together as a team, said Coach Jonathan Brooks. In robotics, the spotlight belongs almost entirely to the students. They design, build, and program their robots. They develop strategies. They troubleshoot mechanical failures. They calculate scores in real time in their heads during fast-paced one-minute matches, and they do it without direct coaching during competition. Brooks said, "We can't tell them what to do. We can only ask questions and guide them." That structure forces students to think critically and communicate clearly, especially when paired with unfamiliar teams and required to quickly form alliances, pushing them well beyond their comfort zones. Students like Luke Brooks, Rylan Tenisti, and Delaney Nez, competing as Fortnite Elite, and Robbie Titla Jr., Trey Alcase, Cedric Susan, and Trayvon Standing Bear of the Mount Baldy Warriors have carried those lessons onto a bigger stage, earning spots at the World Championship. They have to explain everything to judges, their design, their challenges, their successes, Brooks said. A lot of the kids are shy at first, but by the end, they're speaking with confidence. The competition blends engineering, math, communication, and teamwork. Students document their entire process in detailed engineering notebooks, ensuring their work can be replicated step by step. It's not RoboWars, Brooks says. It's very educational and very student-based. What makes East Fork's success even more striking is a context. The team practices just once a week for a few hours, a fraction of the 15 to 20 hours logged in by many STEM-focused and charter school programs that they compete against. They also operate almost entirely on fundraising and donations. Robotics is not part of the school's formal budget, leaving students and coaches to organize bake sales, pizza fundraisers, and community events to cover costs. Despite these challenges, the program has taken off. In just 4 years, East Fork teams have consistently placed in the top three at competitions across Arizona and beyond, earning awards in Phoenix, Oklahoma, and Colorado. The depth shows across the program. Students like Aiden Massey, Jacob Nunez, and Julian Taylor help push the East Fork Warriors to a third-place finish at state, while Nicole Edwards, Presley Sam, Jerry Annie Tassay, and Kirsten Marone, competing as the Rez Princesses, have continued to earn recognition across multiple events. Last year's championship team, Delaney Nez, Julian Taylor, Ava Stuchura, and Jaden Wilson, laid the foundation, making history as the first team from the White Mountains to win a state title, with the school sending four teams to the World Championship. This year, three teams are headed there again. Brooks said, "It's amazing to see what those students are accomplishing." And now we turn to news down the Mogollon Rim in Payson. From the Payson Roundup is a headline: Planning Commission OKs conditional use permit for Circle K project near the Walmart. A story by Alexis Beckman. A divided Planning and Zoning Commission approved a conditional use permit last week for a new Circle K gas station near Walmart, advancing a project that drew sustained opposition from nearby residents during public comment. The proposal calls for construction at the corner of State Route 87 and Rumsey Drive, 400 North Beeline Highway as the address, on roughly 5 acres of an 8-acre parcel. The site is currently dominated by a hill that would be leveled for development. Plans show a 5,200-square-foot convenience store, 7 gasoline fueling positions, 3 high-speed diesel pumps for trailers and trucks, and an RV dumping station. The company also proposes extensive parking, multiple entry points, and upgraded infrastructure. And also from the Payson Roundup is a story to lighten the day. The headline: The Sparkle of Light in the Darkness. A story by Peter Alshire. Elizabeth Fowler told me that the last time that she saw Buckshot Dot in the nursing home, Buckshot Dot was getting packed for college. Buckshot Dot was 94, and in the final days of an epic run as a human being. Mind you, Elizabeth Fowler is her own treasure, the colorful heart of Rim Country artist and a gifted teacher. So I was struck by her story of Buckshot Dot packing for college in the long shadow of the end of everything. In truth, I don't know if Buckshot Dot ever finished packing for that next adventure, but she died on March 16th of this year, and it'll be a long while before we see her like again. D. Strickland Johnson, better known as Buckshot Dot, was a singer, a poet, a teacher, a wife, a mother, a grandmother, and great-grandmother. She was an Arizona cultural keeper with shelves full of awards for her writing, singing, and teaching. I would say she left a hole in the world now that her elfin laugh, great-hearted music, and warm, silly, deep lyrics have fallen silent. But that wouldn't be true, because just thinking about her brings a sparkle of light in the greater darkness to everyone who knew her, and even fumbling fellow travelers like me. Buckshot Dot understood the great secret. Everybody dies. Everyone suffers heartbreaking loss. Everyone must find a way to get up and get on with it. And even so, it always ends the same. But still, that's not the point. The point is what you do with that flicker of days that you've been granted. The point is whether you found the breath to sing and heart to love. The point is whether you left more joy than sorrow, more light than dark, more love than fear. Lord willing, we're all finding some of the joy and courage of Buckshot Dot. I encountered her here everywhere and there over my years of chronicling the beloved community here in Rim Country. It was always a hoot to listen to her song and her sing. I always felt feeling better about being a human being in a ridiculous and indifferent universe. Buckshot Dot was a folk singer, historian, writer, cowboy poet, columnist, teacher, and master performer. She was the 1997 Female Cowboy Poet of the Year. Won the 2008 Western Music Association Cowboy Poetry Book of the Year, as well as a Will Rogers Medallion Award. She opened for Lyle Lovett, performed in 16 states, Canada and the British Isles, and made a lifetime study of Celtic music. She raised 3 children and wound up with 2 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren in the course of a marriage of 63 years. But she also lost her beloved husband, John, known as Old Buck. John died after a long illness through which she nursed him through. She quipped that he carried her guitar and clapped the loudest at every performance that she gave. She endured the unbearable loss of her son. She mourned her parents and sister and 3 brothers. And still, Buckshot Dot never stopped singing, showing up, giving herself to the people and causes she loved. She wrote songs about lost love, outlaws, fools, flinty fathers, and young lovers. Her lyrics were ever infused with wistful, rollicking tenderness. She had learned that love and loss gets all mixed together in every chorus. Dot lived her own adage, keep at it, the one reliable antidote to sorrow. She wrote, "The Fiddling Fairy of the Forest," for a dear friend who played with her and who played again at Dot's funeral. She could have been writing about herself. And part of the lyrics go, "Her music's divine, and with all the sheer joy that her music imparts, her fingers keep touching the strings of my heart." Well said, my dear girl. And maybe I'm tearing up now because I died for 15 minutes a couple years ago before my daughter's CPR kept blood in my brain until the paramedics arrived. So I understand how short the time, how long the road, and why Buckshot Dot kept showing up, making music, finding those shards of laughter in the rubble. I understand now that the darkness always waits, but it's no match for the light. Well, that wraps up this edition of Northland Views. This is Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you so much for listening.